I was wondering, Mr. Johnson, you were looking like you might want to say something. Would you please pull up a chair, please? We've had as many as four there.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that, and I'm not sure, excuse me, I'm not sure exactly how it affects this bill, but the way to address the problem as described with a one-word insertion under the AS 1808090 definitions number one, what that says is previously in that statute, it talks about advanced life support and that you have to be certified or licensed in order to do advanced life support. And advanced life support means emergency cardiac techniques provided under the, emergency care techniques provided under the written or oral orders of a physician that include, but are not limited to, electric cardiac defibrillation, etc. And getting back to the word manual, if we inserted the word manual there, we're simply saying you'd have to be appropriately licensed or certified to use a manual defibrillator. But that would not require automated defibrillators to come under this requirement.
Okay, and you're under AS 18, did you say?
Yes.
Representative Porter.
Would you accept a conceptual amendment to include that in the bill?
I would certainly.
That would be fine.
May have to be a change in the title. I don't know.
Ready for use of a defibrillator.
With whatever machinations are required.
It may be that
the use of a defibrillator, it didn't sound like it would.
Techniques provided under the written or oral orders of the physician.
We're still talking about civil liability for use of a defibrillator. Sure.
Well, that section is talking about who can do it according to law.
I understand. Yeah.
Oh, the title question, yeah.
And it relates to 965090.
Yeah.
I think a conceptual amendment would be there.
Conceptual amendment to make this that we're saying is not, that is partially immunized, not illegal, to make the same things we're talking about here not illegal would be, I think, the proper way to go.
Big 10-4.
Big 10-4. Do you have the conceptual idea?
I think what Representative Croft just mentioned, conceptual amendment that
we include
includes that this is not an illegal act. That is, the liability is immunized and the actual activity is legal. And allow, or do you need to go
under AS 18?
Instead of the
like
definition.
That. Representative Porter.
If I understood the way he read that statute, the only required additional amendment is to add the word manual in front of electrical.
Yes.
Right.
Just as we have here.
Yes.
But in that other statute.
Right. 18, whatever that is. Does everybody understand the conceptual amendment, and is there objection to it? Hearing none, we will insert that in its best place.
Hang it on the end.
Hang it on the end. That sounds like a Western song.
It probably is.
Chairman, can I make a motion?
Wait, yes. Hold on.
Oh. Pardon me. Representative Berkowitz.
Thank you. I did have another amendment of a legal nature, but I'll forget about that. And I got to apologize, be a little sheepish about this next amendment, but I'll preface it by noting my grandmother's an English teacher. On line 20,
page two,
the device is maintained consistent. I believe that should be consistently.
Is it a modifying word?
It's a modifying word.
Consistently maintained. That's right. It's an adverb.
Okay. I apologize, but I can just feel my ears getting boxed. So,
is that a motion?
So as to be.
That's right. We will make that.
I thought they were disallowed by the drafting manual.
Seriously?
I mean, they're not disallowed, but they're discouraged. Yeah. That's why they don't use them.
It is in the
move bill?
I think Representative Rookberg had his.
I want to water on his grandmother.
But you were going to do something.
I was going to do something.
It's only 15 minutes to go. Hang on, Pang.
It is Friday, isn't it?
Mr. Chairman, I would move the committee substitute for House version 395 with individual recommendations, and I don't believe
zero
fiscal note on the E version.
It is
as amended.
As amended.
Is there objection? You got one.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's been the most fun I've had all day.
This is a fun committee.
That brings us to House Bill 196, and there he is, and we have the prime sponsor here.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Joe Ryan. I represent District 21. This bill that we're asking you to introduce, and by the way, the committee have CS/B.
Yes.
The bill makes a number of important improvements to Alaska's estate and trust laws. Section 1 to 8, 18 and 19 of the bill change Alaska law to permit a person who is domiciled outside of Alaska to select Alaska as the jurisdiction for the probate of his or her estate. This provision should bring significant business to the state. In other jurisdictions, they give the attorneys a percentage of the estate as a fee. Alaska doesn't. You only get time, the time you spend, and it will keep people from necessarily having to go to another state to probate the will. It can be probated here in Alaska. Sections 9 and 10 of the bill allow a person to limit the liability of a trustee and his or her trust when more than one trustee is serving. The person could provide only the trustee who exercises a power will be held liable for its actions that the other trustees who did not participate in the exercise of that particular power would not be held liable for the actions of the other trustee. The provision will encourage trustees in Alaska to work with other trustees of the same trust. The Uniform Trust Act, included in Section 11, which clarifies many issues involving the administration of trust in Alaska. Section 12 protects an Alaska trustee who in good faith defends an Alaska trust from the claims of a creditor who seeks to set the trust aside. If the trustee acts in good faith, then the trustee gets the first lien on all trust assets for payment of its fees, costs, and attorney fees. Delaware has adopted a similar provision to protect its trustees. Section 14 clarifies that a trust created in another state or country can be moved to Alaska even though the trust was settled before the Alaska Trust Act was passed last year. Uniform Trustees Powers Act is enacted in Section 16. Alaska does not have a statutory provision that sets out the powers of a trustee. These statutory powers would supplement the powers set forth in the trust agreement. A number of miscellaneous provisions are included elsewhere in the bill. Section 15 allows a person to include a penalty clause in his or her trust. Section 17 clarifies the accounting of bond premiums and discounts. Section 20 amends Alaska Statute 3440.110, Subsection D, to be consistent with the Uniform Fraudulent Transfers Act. Section 21 precludes an action by creditors of the grantor of the trust against those whose assets in the creation of the trust. The bill will improve our estate and trust laws and will make Alaska laws more favorable to our residents. In addition, the bill will make our laws more attractive to people outside of Alaska who are considering Alaska for the administration of the estates and trusts. I also have asked Mr. Richard Thwaites, Esquire, practicing attorney, the immediate past chairman of the estate planning section of the Alaska Bar, to come and explain perhaps more of the technical aspects of the bill to you. As you know, I'm not an estate planning attorney. I have some knowledge of it, but when we start getting into the finer aspects of it, I defer to someone more knowledgeable. So, with your permission, Mr. Chairman, could you ask Mr. Quake?
Certainly may. Hello, Dick.
Hello.
Please identify yourself for the record.
Okay. Richard Thwaites. I'm an attorney in Anchorage, Alaska, concentrating the area of practice in estate planning and probate. Basically, I'm one of the past chairs of the estate planning section, the elder law section, and various other national organizations as well that are similarly focused.
Are there questions of Mr. Thwaites? Attorney Roper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dick, I'd like to know what this, this 23-page bill does.
Could you go through it section by section?
There's no sponsor statement.
There is a sponsor statement. He read from that.
I'm sorry. It was. It was actually the weight of the bill covered it up.
Well, if I can summarize.
Good.
You know, rather than just for purposes of where it's going. We are looking at Alaska, because of this new trust act, as a destination jurisdiction for this. And basically what has happened in many of the national meetings, everybody is now very attentive to Alaska as being the location to go for estate planning. This takes that one step further in that, let's say that one of your relatives died in Kansas or some other jurisdiction because the defibrillator didn't work. And there was no other relative down there and no reason for you as the person who is doing the administration of the estate to go down there. This bill provides that you can actually do that administration here in Alaska in your home of residence, and you just need to apply the Kansas law to the Kansas real estate or whatever that might be. And so it permits the jurisdiction of the court to extend to those types of probates. And even in our probate code, it is discretionary on the person to bring the action here. So in all of the other states, it's likewise discretionary, and they don't have to have a probate in that state if no assets are required. This also defers to that other jurisdiction, which means if there is somebody down there who says that, no, we want to have the probate there, then you're going to have to defer to that jurisdiction. So if the Kansas court did come up and say they would have a priority, so this is only in the situation where no one is objecting. Typically, that would be the younger generation here wanting to do it there. Further than that, it actually goes a little further, and it allows perhaps someone setting up an Alaska trust to also, as part of their estate plan, suggest that Alaska would be the designated jurisdiction for the administration of their estate, say where there is a probate provision in their will that whatever assets are still in their estate pours over to their Alaska trust. It permit that administration. California, for example, requires many, many hearings, requires a definitive process to go through the probate process. It also sets up statutory fees on a percentage basis of the estate. As a result, many states have living trusts as the primary form of estate planning, for the purpose of avoiding probate in those jurisdictions. I think Maine and Kentucky and Wisconsin, Alaska, and Idaho are five of the states which do not have these percentage fees. For that reason, it is often very convenient to go into the Alaska court, where we have a non-intervention system, which means no one ever has to attend a hearing or go to court. You merely hand the petition to the court. The court then authorizes the personal representative to act, as long as the personal representative swears they will abide by all of the probate rules. And at the end, after distributions have occurred and after the minimum requirements have been met with the Department of Revenue and so forth, there's a closing letter that they have to issue. When those things are done, the personal representative merely files a sworn statement closing the estate. That's called an informal administration of an estate. That's fairly common to the 14 jurisdictions that have the Uniform Probate Code. We are, in essence, extending this option to all of the citizens of the United States, which means, obviously, that the lawyers, CPAs, trust officers, and so forth might get a little additional business as a result of that. The state of Alaska arguably would get the additional fees for the filings and those sorts of things that are also required. We have discovered, as a result of the Alaska Trust Act, one slight bonus that has happened. Many of the state jurisdictions, the professors and so forth in those states, are now recommending to their prospective lawyers that when considering the Alaska Trust or Alaska as a jurisdiction for either trusts or estates, that if they really want to make it solid, they won't transfer some of their assets to Alaska. They will transfer a majority of the assets to Alaska. Obviously, from a conservative standpoint, that means that you are solidly within both the situs, meaning you've designated Alaska as a jurisdiction, and the minority opinion, which is substantial contact. So you've got two opinions of how to determine whether Alaska is the appropriate jurisdiction or not. By placing a majority of your assets that are in trust with the Alaska administrators and so forth, you have met both tests. And the Oregon Bar, in their January letter to their members, has given a description about how to set these things up. And in their recommendation, they suggest you ought to really have substantial contacts with Alaska, as well as declaring it the situs of the jurisdiction. So this is a further enhancement of that, permitting in the probate code portion of the statute designation of Alaska as the jurisdiction in the will as well as in the trust. It doesn't override the other, however. Yes, Mr. Chairman.
For someone who is not at all familiar with this, if you were going to transfer the assets of real property, I can understand that that would be sold in the other state and be subject to any taxations. What about mobile things like money or
jewelry?
What?
Jewelry.
Jewelry, things like that. Would there be a taxation before they would be removed from that jurisdiction to this one?
Under the current common law of the United States, the tangible personal property passes in the state in which the person is domiciled. So if someone in Oregon had tangible personal property, Oregon would impose a tax on that tangible personal property. However, if they had placed that property in an Alaska trust, the domicile of that property is then Alaska. And then the portion of the estate tax return concerning the tangible personal property, even though it's a Florida resident, would be paid to the Alaska Department of Revenue under the trust.
Representative Berkowitz.
I say this is a shorthand way of acknowledging that I haven't pondered this bill in any great detail. But who's opposed to this bill and why?
Well, I guess it would be the other jurisdictions that want to impose or protect their right to tax and levy against those assets. There is a certain right of the citizens of the U.S. under the Constitution to be able to freely transfer these things back and forth. And currently, I think Delaware's reaction to our last trust, but within 19 days, they, after we had passed our bill here last year, within 19 days, they introduced and passed a similar statute, even citing the Alaska statute as what they were trying to copy. They kind of messed it up because there were some other things that were placed in there that didn't make it work for tax reasons, and they're attempting to straighten those out this year. But I think that Delaware and South Dakota are likewise trying to capitalize on being a destination situs, if you will, for those kinds of assets. And it only affects the personalty. It doesn't affect the real estate.
But there would be no Alaskan opposition to this. I mean,
I'm not aware of any. I mean, the banks certainly wouldn't. I mean, it would favor their thing. Most of the Alaskan residents that would have someone outside of the state and a family member, and I come across this quite frequently, where clients of mine, a relative has died, and there is no one living in that particular location except that relative. It would be a lot easier to have done the administration on this end rather than traveling down there and doing all of the work. And as long as no one is going to object on the other end, it can be done via this device. It allows our court to accept that jurisdiction.
Is this, in essence, an addendum to the bill that we passed last year? But this covers intestation as opposed to those that...
Not really.
Not really.
The one last year covered expressly the trust law.
Yeah.
This actually covers, well, there are many parts to this. The main part of this, as far as probate goes, is the probate portion. The section regarding the trustees that Representative Ryan talked about does affect the corporate fiduciaries that might be involved, or even individual fiduciaries that might be involved here. For example, if your brother-in-law and sister-in-law acted as a trustee along with an Alaska bank or someone else, they wouldn't be liable for the bank's actions, and the bank wouldn't be liable for their actions. So it makes it more acceptable for those corporate fiduciaries to accept that work. Presently, in most jurisdictions, the corporate fiduciary, if they're going to have some liability, they're concerned about, if I have a little bit of the liability, I'm going to have all of the liability. And they're less than willing to go ahead and co-administer a fund. And this will limit that exposure and encourage co-administration so that you have a family member involved, perhaps with the corporate fiduciary, not having the liability passed back and forth one to the other.
Thank you. Representative Croft.
Good to see you, Dick. I've read the bill a number of times and gone through it section by section, as I'm sure the other members of the committee have, besides Representative Berkowitz. but I wonder, taking a different take on it, can you identify, there are some portions of this that are uniform laws or come from uniform reforms, and there are some that merely relate to transferability of trust properties. But can you, and I, those seem to me either acceptable because I tend to trust the uniform drafters and know that process, or a transfer type operation seems to me sort of substantively neutral. It's just allowing them to bring the trust property up here or expediting the ways they can do that. And I'm more interested in the substantive changes. So aside from the ones that we've adopted out of uniform laws, and aside from things that simply relate to how someone would transfer their trust property up here, what are the major substantive changes to our trust law? And I guess in particular I'm concerned about the penalty clause in Section 15, an explanation of why that's good public policy.
Yeah, I believe that you have someone on the phone, actually Rich Hompish from Fairbanks, who has spent a considerable time working on the statute. But I have it. You may want to defer specifically to him on that regard.
He is signed up to talk.
Okay.
Any other questions? We have three people. Oh, yes, Representative Porter.
Please. Dick, Section 19. Had some familiarity with what would be the Uniform Fraudulent Transfer Act that turned out to be a little bit ununiform. I'm a little not understanding of the term or otherwise in there. A cause of action or a claim for relief with respect to a fraudulent transfer under B1, which is basically describing a fraudulent transfer of this section, or otherwise, is extinguished unless the action is brought.
I think it's meant to broaden this limitation to correspond to the statute that we adopted under our Trust Act as well. We also have a 4-year, 1-year statute there. And this is making it consistent and expanding that definition to cover these broader terminologies. And I think Rich Hompish can speak directly to that for you, because he worked very much on this language while I was outside of the state. But basically, it brings this existing statute into compliance with the trust statute, where we set those up. It doesn't really, and you're correct, you referred to the Uniform Fraudulent Transfer Act, and we had one of the early versions of that. It's since been amended, I think, twice, and we have not adopted those amendments. Likewise, through Chair to Representative Croft, the Uniform Act provision, for example, the Uniform Trust Act that is referred to in here, there was a comment by the Attorney General's office last year about that, because the uniform commissioners are talking about modifying the Uniform Act. And of course, what we have here was the existing Uniform Act that was in existence and is currently the law for the state of Alaska, not the new revised version that they haven't put out. We also adopted the 1993 version of the Uniform Probate Code. And so there are many versions of that, and there are lots of variations. And while ours is called the Uniform Probate Code, we did not adopt all the provisions of it. And there are provisions for variations there. So whenever we have a uniformed act, I think the connotation is that we are substantially similar and our concept is the same as the Uniform Act, but every state has a little variation one way or the other from those acts. So we're never quite exactly the same as. And in the ACTEC meeting, which was the American College of Trust and Estates Council, the professors from Chicago and Pennsylvania were selected because of their purported neutrality to the act. And when confronted by the practitioners and fellows of the college about does Alaska work, the answer was yes, Alaska works. And it works in large part because of our fraudulent transfer statute not being the new uniform version that they're touting, because that goes out to future creditors, and ours does not.
We have three people, and we are overdue, so I'm going to try and get them in on the testimony. It's obvious that we're going to probably have to carry over because we're out of time, but I do want to get those people who have signed up. We have Bob Manley in Anchorage.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bob Manley. I'm an attorney primarily involved in estate planning here. I am not representing any clients in this testimony. I urge you to adopt the proposed substitute language.
Page 16.
It's an improvement of the Alaska Trust Act and basically generate greater freedom of action for people in disposing of their property. As Mr. Weiss indicated, the Alaska Trust Act previously passed last year has received a lot of national commentary. And in fact, while I was waiting here to testify, I was just looking at some material from the Heckerling Institute in Florida, which had about 1,200 estate planning attorneys across the nation. And one of the presentations was involved North to the Future, the Alaska Trust, again, establishing Alaska as a site for money management. I think we've already got a good start. It's a good, clean growth industry. But like all these things, it's important to keep current and modify with the current trends. And there have been substantial commentary and suggestions from outside on how we could improve our act. And as you know, Delaware passed a copycat legislation with a few improvements, and we're copying back some of their better provision. Now, Representative Porter had a question about the Fraudulent Transfers Act, and I was involved in some of the testimony there, so I recall that those issues. And what this provision regarding the four-year and one-year statute of limitations does is adopt exactly the language, or almost exactly the language, of the Uniform Fraudulent Transfers Act, which is that the cause of action is extinguished after that four-year or one-year period runs. And previously, we simply provided that the cause of action, I believe, expired or at least could no longer brought. So it was procedural rather than substantive. And the change, one, patterns us closer to that Uniform Fraudulent Transfer statute of limitations. And second, it makes it more likely that a court outside of Alaska will recognize the validity of our statute of limitations. And that's Section 19. The other thing that I want to point out and urge you to consider favorably is the new Section 20, which provides that if a fraudulent conveyance action is brought and is successful, in other words, if somebody was trying to cheat their creditors, and they knew who their creditors were, and they hid some money in the Alaska Trust, the Alaska courts and any other court are going to approve are going to approve invasion of that. However, if, because of the expiration of the statute of limitations or otherwise, the Alaska courts do not view it as a fraudulent conveyance, if it's, as Mr. White mentioned, one of those future unknowable creditors in the future, what this does is it prevents the creditor from going in the back door and, instead of getting to the trust asset, suing the trustee for conspiracy to commit a fraudulent conveyance or the equivalent, which might have a different statute of limitations. So simply this makes it better for or safer for individuals and institutions to act as trustees. And I think if you follow the local bank stocks, you'll see that MBA has had a tremendous run-up in the last year. Northrim has been shooting up. We've got a new Alaska Trust Company. There's some new financial institutions also that are looking at Alaska seriously for establishing new bases of operation. And this kind of improvement of the law makes it more likely that we can continue this good, clean, new industry of money management for Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you. Bob, are there any questions of Mr. Manley? I would, at this time, before we lose a quorum, entertain a motion to adopt the CS.
I would so move, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative James has moved that we adopt CS version B, Bannister 3498, as our working document. Is there objection? If not, that is our document. We also have in Anchorage Johnny Grahams.
My name is John Grahams, and I'm not here to talk about my own case, but as a paradigm for that you're setting up Alaskans and Americans to get leased by these predators operating under these laws that are set up by the judiciary branch of government and lobbied by these lying lawyers. And I don't know how else to warn the people what's happening. And Mr. Waits is a crook. And he sold out my sons, who are beneficiaries, to my mother's estate, our family estate, which my father came here in 1915 and built up, and now the lawyers and the bankers are going to be able to steal the estate for the next 22 years. Now, the reason that you don't hear about this is because the court system is totally politicized and corrupted. And I'm not able to appeal, not able to file a due process appeal, so I'm blocked from access to the court to petition the government for redress of grievance, which is a constitutional right, so that nobody knows about this. And you will not hear it with the Alaska Commission on Judicial Conduct, where the probate master and the judges.
Mr. Grahams, we're running late. I'm going to have to ask you to sum up.
I don't want to hear this.
No, it's not that. It's just that we're running late.
Also, Mr. Thwaites appointed a guardian ad litem for my son, and I am the father and the trustee, and he lives with me, and the court system went along with it. So a trustee has power over my son, and we have no privacy, and we are unable to protect him from the guardian and from court control. And that's Mr. Thwaites that you're depending on.
Well, we certainly thank you for your information, Mr. Grahams. Are there any questions of the members of the panel, of the committee? Hearing none, we thank you, and we'll go to Fairbanks, Richard Hompish.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Rich Hompish. I'm an attorney in private practice in Fairbanks, and I'm just here to answer any questions. And Representative Croft asked about Section 15 of the bill. I'd like to restrict my comments to that, unless there are other questions. The policy behind Section 15, which is a penalty provision, goes as follows. If I want to set up a trust, Section 15 clarifies that I can have a provision in the trust that says, if any of my children who are beneficiaries of the trust sue the trustee, the trustee can deduct its attorney's fees from that child's share. And many times we have, estate planners have clients who have difficult children who are very prone to frivolous litigation. And as you know, Rule 82, which is our attorney's fee provision, rarely provides for a full award of attorney's fees when litigation is filed that's frivolous. So this type of provision, or a penalty provision, would allow a person setting up a trust to charge the beneficiary who files the frivolous litigation for the costs. Without such a provision, all of the beneficiaries of the trust would have to share the legal fees for defending the frivolous litigation. And I think it's good policy to allow such a clause under Alaska law, because like the Community Property Act and other provisions of our new laws, this penalty provision is completely optional. If a person chooses to put a credit or include a penalty provision in their trust, they may. It's provided, it's allowed under Alaska law. Most people may choose not to. So as a matter of freedom of choice, I think it's good policy for Alaska. And unless there are other questions, I'd like to thank you and urge you to pass House Bill 196.
Thank you. We have a question from Representative James.
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to say hello to Rich.
Oh. Hi. Representative James, glad to hear you.
Representative Croft?
And Rich, we're over time, but I would, maybe we can get you back to answer some more questions on it. I didn't see in that Section 15 that the suit had to be frivolous. Indeed, it said, even if probable cause existed for instituting the proceedings. So these can be valid but losing suits, not just frivolous ones.
Yes, the penalty provision merely says that if you want to provide a penalty provision, it could say that even if the beneficiary's claim is meritorious, that the penalty provision could still apply. Now, I'm not here to say that such a penalty provision should be included. I think most of my clients would probably say, they would prefer a penalty provision that would apply if the litigation was frivolous. But it's important to remember that most of the trusts that I think Mr. Thwaites, Mr. Manning, myself, and other attorneys in Alaska are doing today have trust protector clauses. And a trust protector clause allows someone, some trusted advisor in the family, to remove the trustee without cause. So it would seem to me that this penalty provision would encourage the resolution of disputes through the trust protector and not through our court system.
Thank you.
I see no other questions. Sure, thank you, Mr. Hoppish. And we're going to probably have to revisit this. There are undoubtedly some other questions. We've lost half our committee. So with that, we're adjourned.